loosely. Then, as a unit, they lumbered forward. At the center of the bridge, the city's last line of defense braced for the Northland rush. On the ridge west of the city, Flick Ohmsford and the little band of elven horsemen watched helplessly as the destruction of Tirsis mounted. Flanked by Eventine and John Lynn Sander, the Veilmen felt the last trace of hope fade as the hordes of the mammoth Northland army poured unchecked through the breached gates of the outer wall. Clouds of dark smoke rose now from within Tirsis, and the last remnants of the proud Border Legion had been driven from her walls. The city's defenses had been broken. He stared in horror as the grotesque figures of the Skullbearers hovered in full view above the advancing enemy, black wings spread wide against the darkening noon sky. The worst that Alanon had foreseen had come to pass. The warlock lord had won. Then a sharp cry sounded from a rider to his left, and Eventine's flushed countenance surged into view as he spurred his mount forward, crowding the Veilmen aside in his eagerness. Across the wide expanse of the empty grassland, still many miles to the west, a faint, dark line grew against the grayness of the horizon. A low rumble of pounding hooves broke out of the distance to blend with the clamor and fury of the battle behind them. The dark line grew quickly in size and became horsemen, thousands strong, banners and lances flashing color and iron. Strident and clear, the booming wail of a war horn sounded their arrival. Cheers rose from the little band of elves as the massive body of horsemen began to blanket the plains, sweeping at breakneck speed toward Tirsis. Forewarned of their approach, the rear guard of the Northland army had already closed ranks and turned to face the advancing tide. It was the elven army come at last. For the defenders of Tirsis, for the beleaguered nations of three lands, for everything mankind had fought so hard to preserve through the ages, come perhaps too late. Chapter 33. In a single, smooth, silent motion, Shay slid the ancient blade free from its battered sheath. The metal gleamed in the faint torchlight with a deep bluish tint, the iron surface flawless as if the legendary sword had never been carried in battle. It was unexpectedly light, a slim, balanced blade of exceptional workmanship, the handle carefully engraved with the now familiar crest of a raised hand holding forth a burning torch. Shay held the weapon guardedly, glancing quickly at Panamon Creel and Keltset, seeking their reassurance, afraid suddenly of what was going to happen. His grim-faced companions remained motionless, their expressions blank and impassive. He gripped the sword tightly with both hands, bringing the blade around sharply until it pointed skyward. His palms were sweating freely, and he felt his body grow cold in the cell's darkness. There was a faint stirring to one side, and a feeble moan broke from the lips of Orlfane. Moments passed, and Shay was conscious of the raised impression of the crest pressing into the palms of his clenched hands. Still, nothing happened. In the gray half-light of the empty chamber at the peak of Skull Mountain, the dark waters of the stone basin were quiet and smooth. The power that was the warlock lord lay dormant. Abruptly the sword of Shannara grew warm in Shay's hands, and a strange pulsating wave of heat coursed from the dark iron into the palms of the astonished Veilman, and then disappeared. Startled, he took a quick step backward and lowered the blade slightly. An instant later, the sudden warmth was replaced by a sharp tingling sensation that surged out of the weapon into his body. Though there was no pain, The abruptness of the sensation caused him to wince reflexively, and he felt his muscles tighten. Instinctively, he sought to release the talisman. To his shock, he found that he could not let go. Something touched deeply into him to forbid it, and his hands locked securely around the ancient handle. The tingling sensation rushed through him, and now he was conscious of a return flow of energy that pulled at his life force, carrying it down through the cold metal of the sword itself until the weapon became a part of him. The gilt paint that coated the carved pommel began to strip away beneath the veilman's hands, and the handle turned to polished silver, laced with reddish streaks of light that seemed to burn and twist in the bright metal like living things. Shay felt the first stirrings of something coming awake, something that was a part of him, yet foreign to everything he knew himself to be. It pulled at him, subtly but firmly, drawing him down deeper inside himself. Several steps away, Panamon Creel and Keltzet watched with growing concern as the little veilman seemed to slip into a trance, his eyelids drooping heavily, his breathing slowing, his form turning statue-like in the dim torchlight of the cell. He held the sword of Shannara before him in both hands, its blade raised and pointed skyward, the polished silver handle gleaming brightly. For an instant, Panamon considered taking hold of the veilman and shaking him awake, but something restrained the thief. From out of the shadows, Orlfane began crawling across the smooth stones toward his precious sword. Panamon hesitated a moment, and then nudged him back roughly with his boot. Shay felt himself being drawn inward, borne like a cork caught in an undertow. Everything around him began to fade from view. The walls, ceiling, and floor of the stone cell disappeared first, then the cringing, whimpering figure of Orlfane. Finally, even the granite forms of Panamon and Keltzet vanished. The strange current seemed to wrap around him completely, and he found that he could not resist it. Slowly he was pulled into the innermost recesses of his being, until all was blackness. A momentary shudder rippled the still basin waters in the cavern depths at the crown of the solitary death's head, and the frightened, crawling beings that served the master scampered from their places of concealment in the stone walls. The warlock lord stirred warily from his broken sleep. In the vortex of emotion and basic self that comprised the centermost region of his being, the bearer of the Sword of Shannara came face to face with himself. For a moment there was a chaos of uncertain impressions. Then the current seemed to reverse itself, carrying him off in a new direction entirely. Pictures and impressions loomed up before him. Thrust suddenly before his eyes, the world that was his birthplace and life source, from past to present, lay open and revealed to him, stripped bare of his carefully nurtured illusions, and he saw the reality of existence in all its darkness. No soft dreams colored its view of life. No wishful fantasies clothed the harshness of its self-shaped choices. No self-conceived visions of hope softened the rawness of its judgments. Amid its sprawling vastness, he saw himself displayed for the pitiful, insignificant spark of momentary life that he represented. Shay's mind seemed to explode within him, and he was paralyzed by what he saw. He struggled wildly for his grasp of the vision of self that had always sustained him, for what had been his hold on sanity, fighting to shield himself from the awesome view of his inner nakedness and the weakness of the thing he was compelled to recognize as himself. Then the force of the current seemed to diminish slightly. Shay forced his eyes open, avoiding for an instant the inner vision. Before him was the upright sword, ablaze with a blinding white light that surged downward from the blade to the pommel. Beyond it, He could see Panamon and Keltzet standing motionless, their gaze fixed on him. Then the eyes of the giant troll shifted slightly, centering on the sword. There was a strange understanding and urgency in the gesture, and as Shay looked back to the sword of Shannara, its light seemed to pulsate feverishly. There was a sense of impatience about its movement as it strained to advance from the blade into his body and was somehow thwarted in its efforts. For a moment more, the Veilman struggled against this advance, then his eyes again closed and the inner vision returned. The first shock of revelation was past him now, and he made an effort to understand what was happening. He concentrated on the images of Shay Ohmsford, immersing himself completely in the thoughts, emotions, judgments, and motivations that made up this character that was both alien and familiar. The images cleared with frightening sharpness, and abruptly he saw another side to himself, a side he had never been able to recognize, or perhaps had simply refused to accept. It revealed itself in an endless line of events, all caricatures of the memories he had believed in so strongly. Here was an accounting of every hurt he had caused to others, every petty jealousy he had felt, his deep-seated prejudices, his deliberate half-truths, his self-pity, his fears, all that was dark and hidden within himself. Here was the Shay Ohmsford who had fled the Vale, not to save and protect family and friends, but in fear of his own life, seeking any excuse for his panic. The Shay Ohmsford who had selfishly allowed Flick to share his nightmare and thereby ease the pain of it. Here was the Veilman who had sneered at and belittled the moral code of Panamon Creel, while at the same time allowing the thief to risk his own life to save Shay's. And here... The images went on endlessly. Shay Ohmsford recoiled in horror from what he was seeing. He could not accept it. He could never accept it. Yet drawing from some inner well of strength and understanding, his mind opened receptively to the images, expanding outward to embrace them, persuading him, or perhaps forcing him, to admit the reality of what he had been shown. He could not sensibly deny this other side of his character. Like the limited image of the person he had always believed himself to be, this was only a part of the real Shay Ohmsford. But it was indeed a part, however difficult he found it to accept. But he had to accept it. It was the truth. Filled with white, hot rage, the warlock lord came fully awake. Truth. Shay opened his eyes again to stare at the sword of Shannara, gleaming whitely from blade to handle. A warm, pulsating feeling spread rapidly through him, bringing no new vision of self, but only a deep inner awareness. Abruptly, he realized that he knew the secret of the sword. The sword of Shannara possessed the power to reveal truth, to force the man who held it to recognize the truth about himself, perhaps even to reveal the truth about others who might come in contact with it. For an instant he could not bring himself to believe any of it. He hesitated in his analysis, trying desperately to follow up on this unexpected revelation, to find something more because there simply had to be more. But there was nothing else to discover. That was all there was to the sword's vaunted magic. Beyond that, it was no more than what it appeared to be. A finely crafted weapon from another age. The knowledge of what this meant ripped through his mind and left him stunned. No wonder Alanon had never revealed the secret of the sword. What kind of weapon was this against the incredible power of the warlock lord? What possible defense could it offer against a being that could crush the life out of him with little more than a thought? With chilling certainty, Shane knew that he had been betrayed. The sword's legendary power was a lie. He felt himself begin to panic, and he closed his eyes tightly against the chill he was feeling. The blackness about him began to churn violently until he grew dizzy with its sweep and seemed to lose consciousness altogether. In the bleak, gray emptiness of his mountain refuge, the warlock lord watched and listened. Slowly his rage began to subside, and the misty darkness within the hood nodded in satisfaction. The Veilman he had thought destroyed had survived. In spite of everything, he had found the sword. But the man was pitifully weak, lacking the knowledge necessary to understand the talisman. He was already overcome with fear, and he would be vulnerable. Swiftly, noiselessly, the master glided from the cavernous chamber. The tall figure of Alanon paused hesitantly at the crest of a barren, wind-swept hill, his dark eyes invisible beneath the heavy brow, as they studied the stark, solitary line of mountains that rose hauntingly against the gray northern horizon. They seemed to stare back at him, their cavernous faces scarred and worn, reflecting the soul of the land that had spawned them so many years ago. A deep silence hovered expectantly over the whole of the vast wilderness that was the Northland. Even the high mountain winds had died into stillness. The druid wrapped his black robes about him and breathed sharply. There could be no mistake. His extended mind sweep would not lie to him about this. That which he had worked so hard to achieve had finally come to pass. In the deep recesses of the knife edge, still far distant from where the mystic stood, Shay Omsford had drawn forth the sword of Shannara. Yet it was all wrong. Even though the Veilman might be able to withstand and accept the truth about himself and perhaps recognize the secret of the sword, he was still not prepared to use the talisman properly against the warlock lord. There would be no time for him to grow into the necessary confidence while he was alone and unaided, deprived of the knowledge that only Alanon could give him. He would be filled with self-doubt and torn by fear, easy prey for Brona. Even now the druid could sense the awakening of the enemy. The Dark Lord was beginning the descent from his mountain refuge, fully confident that the bearer of the sword was blind to the full power of the talisman. His attack would come quickly and savagely, and Shay would be destroyed before he could learn to survive. Only brief minutes remained before the confrontation, and Alanon knew that he could never arrive in time to help. He had realized at last that Shay and the Sword of Shannara had somehow both gone northward. Leaving the others in Callahorn, he had rushed to the Veilman's aid. But matters had developed too quickly. Now there was only one chance for him to be of any use to Shay, if indeed there was any real chance at all, and he was still too far away. Clutching his robes about his spare frame, the druid moved swiftly down the hillside, scattering the dusty surface in small clouds as he went, his features tight with determination. Panamon Creel started forward as Shay crumpled to one knee, but Kel'Thuzad's massive arm reached in front of him. The troll was facing back toward the entrance to the caverns, listening. Panamon could hear nothing, but a sudden sensation of fear and growing horror reaching down inside him halted his motion toward the Veilman. Kel'Thuzad's eyes turned as if marking the progress of someone passing through the corridor beyond the cell, and Panamon felt his fear deepen. Then a shadow fell over everything. The torchlight that outlined the tiny cavern room dimmed sharply. Standing at the doorway of the cell was a tall form shrouded in black robes. Instinctively, Panamon Creel knew that this was the Warlock Lord. Where a face should have been, beneath the closely drawn hood, there was nothing but darkness and a deep green mist that moved sluggishly about twin sparks of reddish fire. The sparks turned first toward Panamon and Kel'Set, freezing them instantly into motionless statues, sending all the fears and terrors they had ever known rushing through their paralyzed forms. The thief struggled to cry a warning to the little Veilman, but he found that he could not speak, and he watched helplessly as the faceless cowl shifted slowly toward Shay. The Veilman felt himself drift back into consciousness in the shadowed dampness of the little cell. Everything seemed strangely distant to him, though there was a vague warning signal sounding somewhere in the back of his clouded mind. But he responded sluggishly, and for a time there was only the musty smell of stale air and rock and the faint flickering of a single torch. Through a haze, he saw the motionless forms of Panamon and Kel'Set no more than 5 feet from him, fear mirrored in their hard features. Oral Fane crouched at the rear of the cell, twisted into a small yellow ball that whimpered and mumbled incoherently. Before him, the blade of the Sword of Shannara gleamed brightly. Then instantly, the secret of the sword came back to him, and with it, the helplessness of his situation. He started to lift his head, but his eyes seemed locked in front of him. Sudden fear and despair washed over him like a river of ice, and he felt himself drowning in it. He began to sweat coldly, and his hands were shaking. A single thought screamed in his mind. Escape. Flee before the fearsome creature whose forbidden kingdom he had dared invade should discover his presence and destroy him. The purpose for which he had risked everything no longer mattered. All that remained in his mind was the compelling need to flee. He staggered erect. Every fiber of his being screamed at him to break and dash for the doorway, to throw down the sword and run. But he could not do it. Something inside him refused to release the sword. Desperately, he fought to control his fear, his hands closing tightly about the handle of the sword, gripping the metal until the knuckles turned white with pain. It was all that he had left, all that stood between himself and complete panic. He clung to it in desperation, his sanity held together by a talisman he knew to be useless. Mortal creature, I am here. The words were a chilling echo in the deep silence. Shay's eyes fought to look toward the doorway. At first he found only shadows. Then the shadows tightened slowly, gathering together to form the cloaked figure of the Warlock Lord. It hovered menacingly at the chamber door, an impenetrable, dark, formless robe. From within the recesses of the cowl, the green mist swirled, and the sparks of flame that were its eyes flashed and grew. Mortal creature, I am here. Bow down before me. Shay turned white with fear. Something huge and black struck at his mind, and he balanced precariously on the thin edge of total panic. A bottomless chasm seemed to open before him. It would take only one small shove. He forced himself to concentrate on the sword and his own desperate need to stay alive. A crimson haze slipped over his mind, bringing with it the voices of countless doomed creatures that cried for mercy without hope. Crawling, twisted things were clinging to his arms and legs, pulling at him, drawing him downward into the chasm. His courage turned to water. He was so small, so vulnerable. How could he resist a being as awesome as the Warlock Lord? At the far side of the cell, Panamon Creel watched the black-robed figure draw nearer to Shay. The Warlock Lord seemed to be a thing of no substance, a faceless cowl, an empty robe. But he was obviously too much for Shay to handle alone, sword or not. With a quick warning nod to Kel'Thuzet, Panamon fought back against the sense of panic ripping at him and attacked, the piked arm coming up in a wicked sweep. Almost casually, the dark figure turned to him, now no longer seemingly empty, but filled with awesome power. An arm gestured, and the thief felt something iron-like grip his throat and hurl him back against the wall. He struggled once more to break free, but he was held fast and Kel'Thuzet with him. Helplessly, they watched the Warlock Lord turn back toward the Veilmen. The struggle was almost over for Shay. He still held the sword protectively before him, but the last of his resistance was breaking down before the assault of the Dark Lord. He could no longer think rationally. He was powerless against the emotions tearing him apart. From out of the darkness of the hood, a terrible command wrenched at him. "Lay down the sword, mortal creature." Desperately, Shay fought against the urge to obey. Everything became hazy and he struggled to breathe. Far back in his mind, a familiar voice seemed to be calling his name. He tried to answer, screaming inside himself for help. Then the voice of the Warlock Lord ripped at him again. "Lay down the sword." The blade dipped slightly. Shay felt his mind begin to grow numb and the darkness moved closer to him. The sword was of no use to him. Why not discard it and be done? He was nothing to this awesome being. He was only a frail, insignificant mortal. The sword dipped farther. Oral Fane suddenly screamed in mindless terror and fell sobbing on the floor of the darkened cell. Panamon had gone white. Kel'Thuzet's massive form seemed pressed into the cell wall. The tip of the Sword of Shannara hovered just inches from the stone floor, wavering slowly. Then the voice in Shay's mind called out to him again. From out of nowhere, the words reached him in a whisper so faint that he could barely distinguish it. "Shay, have courage. Trust the sword. Al-Anon." The druid's voice pierced the fear and doubt that tightened about the Veilmen, but it was so distant, so distant. "Believe in the sword, Shay. All else is illusion." Al-Anon's words disappeared in a scream of rage from the Warlock Lord as the creature shut the hated druid's voice from the Veilman's mind. But awareness came too late from Rona. Al-Anon had thrown a lifeline, and Shay clung to it, pulling himself back from the edge of defeat. The fear and doubt drew back. The sword came up slightly. The Warlock Lord seemed to move backward a step, and the faceless cowl turned slightly in the direction of Oral Fane. Instantly, the whimpering gnome came erect with the jerking motion of a wooden puppet. No longer his own master, the pawn of the Dark Lord surged forward, the gnarled yellow hands grasping desperately for the sword. His fingers closed about the exposed blade and wrenched futilely at it. Then abruptly Orophane screamed as if in agony, jerking his hands free of the talisman. His features twisted as he dropped to the floor, and his hands groped at his eyes, covering them as if to shut out some horrible vision. Again, the warlock lord gestured. The trembling form struggled to its feet, and the gnome flung himself back into the battle, shrieking his dismay. Again he seized the flashing blade. Again he screamed in anguish and dropped to his knees, releasing the talisman a second time, his eyes streaming with tears. Shay stared down at the crumpled form. He understood what was happening. Orophane had seen the truth about himself, just as Shay had done upon first touching the sword. But for the gnome, the truth was unbearable. Yet there was something strange in all this. Why had not Brona himself attempted to wrest the sword away? It should have been a simple effort. Instead, the warlock lord had first tried illusion to force Shay to release the sword, then had used the already maddened Orophane as his cat's paw. Master of so much power, Brona yet seemed unable to grasp the sword away? It should have been a simple effort. Groped for the answer, so close now. Then there was the first small glimmer of understanding. Orophane was on his feet once more, still hopelessly obedient to the commands of the warlock lord. He came at Shay in maddened desperation, his gnarled fingers groping wildly at the air before him. The Veilman tried to avoid the rush, but Orophane was beyond reason, his mind gone, his soul no longer his own. With a shriek of fear and frustration, he threw himself against the sword. For an instant, the wiry form convulsed about the bright metal as the gnome held himself wrapped about the one thing that still mattered to him in this world. For an instant, it was his at last. Then he died. Stunned, Shay backed away, pulling the weapon free from the lifeless body. Instantly, the warlock lord renewed his assault, thrusting viciously at the Veilman's mind in an effort to crush all resistance. Brutal and direct, he employed no clever twists of doubt, no insinuation of uncertainty, no tricks of self-deception. There was only fear, overwhelming and devastating, hurled with the force of a sledgehammer blow. Visions swam through Shay's mind, the awesome power of the warlock lord pictured in a thousand horrible ways, all directed toward his extermination. He felt himself reduced down to the smallest, least significant living thing that crawled upon the earth. In another second, it seemed, the warlock lord would grind the helpless human into dust. But Shay's courage held. He had almost succumbed to madness once, and this time he had to stand firm, to believe in himself and in Alanon. Both hands gripped the sword as he forced himself to take one small step forward into the constricting haze, into the wall of fear assailing him. He tried to believe that it was only illusion, that the fear and growing panic he felt were not his own. The wall gave slightly, and he fought harder against it. He remembered the death of Orophane and built upon his memory a mental picture of all the others who must die should he fail them now. He remembered the whispered words of Alanon, and he concentrated on what he believed to be the warlock lord's own weakness, revealed in his strange refusal to grasp the sword. Shay forced himself to believe that the real secret of the talisman's power was a simple law that affected even a creature as awesome as Brona. The haze thinned suddenly and the wall of fear splintered. Shay stood again before the warlock lord, and the red sparks flashed wildly now in the dim green mists beneath the cowl. The cloaked arms came up quickly as if to ward off some pressing danger, and the dark figure shrank from him. From the dimness of the far wall, Panamon, Creel, and Keltzet suddenly broke free and came rushing forward, weapons drawn. Shay felt the last traces of the Warlock Lord's resistance to his advance break apart and fade. Then the sword of Shannara came down. An eerie, soundless shriek of terror ripped from the convulsed shroud, and a long, skeletal arm jerked wildly upward. The Veilman pressed the gleaming blade hard against the writhing form, forcing it back against the nearest wall. There would be no escape, he swore softly. There would be an end to the monstrous evil of this creature. Before him, the dark robes shuddered in response as the hooked fingers clawed painfully at the damp cell air. The Warlock Lord began to crumble, and he screamed his hatred of the thing destroying him. Behind his scream, the echo of a thousand other voices cried out for a vengeance that had been too long denied them. Shay felt the horror of the creature rush through the sword into his mind, but with it came strength from those other voices, and he did not relent. The touch of the sword carried with it a truth that could not be denied by all the illusion and deceit of the Warlock Lord. It was a truth he could not admit, could not accept, could not abide, yet a truth against which he had no defense. For the Warlock Lord, the truth was death. Brona's mortal existence was only an illusion. Long ago, whatever means he had employed to extend his mortal life had failed him, and his body had died. Yet his obsessive conviction that he could not perish kept a part of him alive, and he sustained himself through the very sorcery that had driven him to madness. Denying his own death, he held his lifeless body together to achieve the immortality that had escaped him. A creature existing as a part of two worlds, his power seemed awesome. But now, the sword was forcing him to behold himself as he really was, a decayed, lifeless shell sustained only by a misconceived belief in his own reality. A sham, a fantasy created by force of will alone, as ephemeral as the physical being he had made himself appear. He was a lie that had existed and grown in the fears and doubts of mortal men, a lie that he had created to hide the truth. But now the lie was exposed. Shay Ohmsford had been able to accept the weakness and frailty that were a part of his human nature, as it was a part of all men. But the Warlock Lord could never accept what the sword revealed, because the truth was that the creature he had supposed himself to be had ceased to exist almost 1,000 years before. All that remained of Brona was the lie, and now that, too, was taken from him by the power of the sword. He cried out a final time, a whimper of protest that echoed mournfully through the cell, blending with a rising shout of triumph from a chorus of other wraith-like cries. Then all sound ceased. The outstretched arm began to wither and turn to dust, falling from his shuddering form like ash as his body broke apart beneath the robes. The tiny glints of red glimmered once in the thinning green mists and disappeared. The cloak crumpled and sank emptily, falling to the floor in a pile, with the hooded cowl gradually collapsing, until only a worn tangle of cloth remained. An instant later, Shay began to sway unsteadily. too many emotions had chased themselves through his nerves, and too much tension over too long a time were demanding their price from his overstrained body. The floor seemed to tilt beneath his feet, and he was falling slowly, slowly into darkness. In the city of Tirsis, the long, terrible struggle between earth-born mortal and spirit creature peaked with shocking suddenness. From deep within its rock-encrusted heart, the earth began to rumble, the tremors rippling to the scarred surface in steady, menacing shudders. On the low hills east of Tirsis, the small band of elven riders fought roughly to control their frightened mounts, and a haggard Flick Ohmsford stared in bewilderment as the land about him began to shake with the strange vibrations. Atop the inner wall, the giant, indestructible figure of Balinor repelled assault after assault as the Northland armies sought vainly to breach the Southland defense, and for several minutes the tremors went entirely unnoticed in the ferocity of the battle. And on the bridge of Sendik, the advancing trolls halted and glanced uneasily about as the rumbling continued to build. Menyn Lee started as long cracks appeared in the ancient stone, and the bridge defenders stood poised to run. The deep vibrations grew rapidly, building with frightening power into a titanic avalanche of booming shudders that swept through the earth and rock. The wind broke over the land with ferocious thrusts that bore down upon and scattered the elven army still racing to relieve Tirsis. From Cullhaven in the Anar to the farthest reaches of the vast Westland, the great wind roared. Massive forest trees splintered and snapped, and ragged sections of mountains were torn free and crumbled into dust as the blistering force of wind and earthquake gripped the four lands. The sky had deepened into a solid black, cloudless, sunless and empty, as if the heavens had been obliterated with the single stroke of a massive brush. Huge, jagged streaks of red lightning cut through the darkness, spanning the sky from horizon to horizon in an impossible web of electrical energy. It was the end of the world. It was the end of all life. The holocaust promised since the beginning of the spoken word had finally arrived. But a moment later, it was over, dying instantly into complete and utter stillness. The silence hung shroud-like and complete until from out of the impenetrable blackness the sound of wailing cries rose dismally, turning quickly into screams of anguish. In the city of Tirsis, the battle was forgotten. Northlander and Southlander watched in horror as the skull-bearers drifted skyward like formless wraiths, writhing in unspeakable agony, their hooked limbs twisting as they screamed. They hovered momentarily in full view of the men below, who blanched in horror but could not turn away. Then the winged forms began to disintegrate, their dark bodies breaking slowly into ashes and drifting earthward. Seconds later, nothing remained but the vast, empty blackness, which began to move in a huge, rushing sweep that carried it northward, pulling in its borders as if they were the ends of a blanket. To the south first, and then the east and west, blue sky shot into view and the sun swept across the lands with dazzling brightness. In awe, mortal men watched the impossible darkness fold into a single black cloud far to the north, hover motionlessly above the horizon, and then sink downward into the earth and disappear forever. Time drifted away as Shay floated senselessly in a vast, black, empty void. "I don't think he made it." A voice reached into his mind from somewhere far, far away. His hands and face felt the sudden chill of smooth stone against his heated skin. "Wait a minute. His eyes are blinking. Well, I think he's coming around." Panamon Creel. Shay's eyes opened and he found himself lying on the floor in the little cell, yellowish torchlight flickering through the darkness in a hazy glow. He was himself again. One hand still clenched the sword of Shannara, but the power of the talisman had left him, and the strange bond that had briefly joined them together was gone. He stumbled awkwardly to his hands and knees, but a deep, ominous rumbling shook the cavern and he pitched forward. Strong hands reached out to grab him as he fell. "Easy now, slow down a minute." Panamon's rough voice sounded almost in his ear. "Let me take a look at you. Here now, look at me." He practically jerked the little veilman about and their eyes locked. There was just a trace of fear in the thief's hard stare, and then he was smiling. "He's all right, Kelset. Now let's get out of here." He brought Shay to his feet and started moving toward the open doorway. The massive form of Kelset lumbered several feet ahead. Shay took a few uncertain steps and halted. Something held him back. "I'm all right," he muttered, almost inaudibly. Then abruptly, everything came back to him. The power of the sword coursing through his body to link them together, his inner visions of the truth about himself, the frightening battle against the warlock lord, the death of Orlfane. He screamed and faltered. Panamon Creel reached down impulsively with his good arm and held the little veilman close. "Easy, easy. It's all over, Shay. You've done it. You've won. The warlock lord is destroyed. But this old mountain is shaking apart. We've got to get out of here before the whole place comes down around our ears." The low rumbling had grown steadily louder, and chunks of rock were being dislodged from the cavern walls and ceiling and falling in small showers of dust and gravel. Cracks were appearing along the ancient stone as the heavy shaking continued to mount. Shay looked at Panamon and nodded. "You'll be all right." The scarlet-clad thief rose quickly. "I'm going to get you out of this. That's a promise." Swiftly, the three men moved into the dark passageway leading from the chamber. The craggy tunnel twisted and wound through the heart of the knife edge, the rough walls split by jagged seams and fissures. More breaks quickly appeared as the rumbling grew stronger and the walls began to crack and fall apart. The mountain shook as if the earth were threatening to open and swallow it whole, quaking with the force of the thunderous reverberations that echoed brokenly from the core of the earth. They passed through countless small passageways and connecting chambers, moving steadily yet unable to find an exit to safety. Several times one or more went down under a cascade of rock and dust, but each time they worked themselves free. Huge chunks of rock fell crashing before them to block the tunnel passage, but the powerful Kelset heaved the boulders aside, and the small party continued quickly on. Shay began to lose all sense of what was happening to them, a strange weariness settling into his body, pressing remorselessly down and sapping the little stamina that remained. When he thought he could no longer continue, Panamon was at his side to support him, the strong arm alternately lifting him over and shoving him through the stone rubble. They had reached a particularly narrow section of the passageway that angled sharply to the right when a violent, wrenching quake shook the dying mountain. The entire ceiling of the corridor cracked with a grating snap and began to settle slowly downward. Panamon yelled frantically and pulled Shay down in front of him, trying to protect the veilman with his own body. Instantly, Kelset was there, the giant frame bracing as the great shoulders hunched upward against the tons of breaking rock. Dust rose in blinding clouds, and for a moment, everything was obscured from view. Then Panamon Creel was pulling the veilman to his feet, hastening him past the straining form of the rock troll. Shay glanced up once as he crawled and scrambled through the broken stone, and the gentle eyes met his own. The ceiling dropped several inches farther, and the massive human support threw all the awesome strength of a rock troll against it, the bark-like body rigid with the tremendous strain. Shay hesitated, but Panamon's powerful grip closed over his shoulder, pulling him ahead, thrusting him beyond the tunnel angle into a wider corridor. They collapsed in a pile of loose rock and dust, gasping for air. They had just a glimpse of Kel'Thuzet, his great frame still braced against the crumbling stone. Panamon made a sudden move to start back into the passage, but a deep rumble tore through the core of the mountain. With a groan of sliding, shifting rock, the tunnel behind them came apart and collapsed entirely. Tons of stone crashed downward, and the way back disappeared altogether. Shay screamed and threw himself against the wall of rock, but Panamon pulled him back roughly, pushing the piked hand into his face.
"He's dead. We can't help him now."
The haggard face of the Veilman stared back in shock.
"Get moving. Get out of here."
The thief was livid with rage.
"Do you want him to have died for nothing? Move!"
He yanked Shay violently to his feet and thrust him toward the open section of the tunnel. The deep rumbling continued to vibrate through the mountain, and a series of sharp, wrenching quakes nearly threw the two men to the cavern floor as they stumbled ahead. Shay was running blindly now, his eyes clouded with dust and tears. It was becoming difficult to see clearly, and he blinked and squinted in an effort to clear his fading vision. Panamon's labored breathing was close in his ear, and he felt the iron stub of the piked hand shoving against his back, urging him to run faster. Shards of rock splintered from the passage walls and ceiling and rained down on his unprotected body, cutting and bruising it, tearing the forest clothing into tattered strips that hung from the thin, sweating form. In his hands he clutched the gleaming sword, useless to him now except as proof that what had happened to him was more than an imagined madness. Abruptly the tunnel dissolved in the gray light of the northland sky, and they were free of the mountain. Before them the scattered bodies of troll and mutant lay broken in death. Without slowing, the two men raced for the mouth of the winding pass that split the monstrous knife edge. The hardened earth was quaking violently, long, jagged cracks appearing from the base of Skull Mountain and snaking crookedly toward the ring of natural hazards that bound the Forbidden Land. A sudden, grating crash, louder than any that had preceded it, brought the two runners about. In speechless awe, they watched the gaunt face of the skull begin to sag and break apart. Everything seemed to shatter at once, and the mark of the warlock lord disappeared as tons of rock cascaded downward, and Skull Mountain ceased to exist. A thick cloud of yellow dust surged skyward, and a heavy booming sound burst from the bowels of the earth and echoed through the vast emptiness of the Northland. Violent winds swept over the remains of the dying mountain, and the rumbling in the earth began to build once more. In horror, Shay saw the monstrous knife edge begin to shake with the force of this new convulsion. The entire kingdom was disintegrating. Already Panamon was running brokenly for the pass, pulling a dazed Shay with him, but the Veilman needed no urging this time and quickly picked up the pace on his own, his form flying through the tangle of dead bodies. From some final reservoir of courage and determination, he summoned the last of his strength, and a surprised Panamon Creel suddenly found himself running to keep up. By the time they reached the mouth of the mountain pass, pieces of the towering knife edge were beginning to break apart and fall, snapping free with piercing cracks as the booming quakes continued to shake the land. Massive boulders fell with crushing force into the winding canyon, and a heavy avalanche of loose stones slid steadily from the heights of the ancient peaks, building in force as the seconds slipped by. Through the center of this holocaust, the two Southlanders dodged and twisted, the tattered half-elf brandishing his ancient sword, and the one-handed thief. The force of the wind broke over their backs, thrusting them faster through the hail of stone and dust. Twists and turns in the rock walls came and disappeared, and they knew they were closing on the far end of the canyon and the open foothills beyond. Shay was suddenly aware that his eyesight was blurring once more, and he stumbled uncertainly, his free hand rubbing angrily to clear his vision. Suddenly, the entire west wall of the canyon seemed to break apart and come crashing down on both men, burying them in a choking rush of broken rock and dirt. Something sharp struck his exposed head, and for a moment Shay slipped into blackness. He lay partially covered by the mass of rubble, his groping mind trying to shake itself awake. Then Panamon was digging him free, the strong arm lifting him clear of the shattered stone and holding him upright. Through a gray haze, Shay saw blood on the big man's face. Slowly, Shay rose to his feet, leaning heavily on the sword of Shannara for support. Panamon remained on his knees, his piked hand pointed to the pass behind them. Shay glanced anxiously past him. To his dismay, he caught sight of a misshapen, lumbering creature slowly bearing down on them from out of the rising clouds of dust. A mutant. The formless, plastic face was turned toward them, and the monster shuffled steadily forward. Panamon looked up at Shay and smiled grimly. "He's been with us all the way from the other end. I thought we might lose him in the rocks, but he's persistent." He rose slowly and drew free the long broadsword. "Get going, Shay. I'll catch up shortly." The startled Veilman shook his head speechlessly. He must have misunderstood. "We can outrun him," he burst out finally. "We've almost reached the end of the pass anyway. We can fight him there, together." Panamon shook his head and smiled sadly. "Not this time, I'm afraid. I've done something to my leg. I can't run anymore." He shook his head as Shay opened his mouth to speak. "I don't want to hear it, Shay. Now run, and keep running." Tears were streaming down the Veilman's face as he stared at the man. "I can't do that." A sudden rumble shook the knife edge, throwing Panamon and Shay to their knees again. Boulders crashed down the crumbling mountainside as the heavy convulsions continued to build from deep within the earth. The mutant lumbered mindlessly toward them, unaffected by the tremors. Panamon climbed shakenly to his feet, pulling Shay after him. "The whole pass is coming down," he stated quietly. "We don't have time to argue. I can take care of myself, just as I did long before I met you or Kelset. Now I want you to run. Get clear of this pass." He put one hand on the Veilman's slim shoulder and gently shoved him away. Shay took several steps backward and hesitated, bringing the sword of Shannara up almost threateningly. Panamon Creel's broad face showed a flicker of surprise, and then the familiar devilish grin appeared, and the eyes turned to fire. "We'll meet again, Shay Olmsford. You watch for me." He waved the piked hand once in farewell and turned to meet the advancing mutant. Shay stared after him momentarily. His fading eyesight must be fooling him. For an instant it seemed that the Scarlet Thief was not limping after all. Then the heavy tremors rippled through the mountain pass still another time, and the Veilman broke for the safety of the foothills. Slipping and stumbling through the loose rock and earth, dodging the cascade of stone and debris that tumbled from the heights of the knife edge into the narrow canyon, he ran on, alone. Chapter 34. The afternoon was almost gone. Sunlight slipped in long, hazy streamers through the drifting white clouds, settling with warm touches over the barren, empty Northland terrain. Here and there the light fell providently on small patches of green, the first signs of a permanent life that one day soon would flourish in this earth that had lain parched and desolate for so many years. In the distance, the blunted tips of the shattered knife edge broke starkly against the northern horizon, and from the devastated valley beyond, the dust still hung suspended above the ruins of the Skull Kingdom. Shay seemed to appear out of nowhere, wandering aimlessly through the tangle of ravines and ridges that carved out the foothills immediately below the knife edge. Half-blind and completely exhausted, the tattered figure was barely recognizable. He came toward Al-Anon without seeing him, both hands gripping tightly the silver-handled sword. For just an instant, the druid stared speechlessly at the strange spectacle of the stumbling, ragged swordsman. Then with a sharp cry of relief, he rushed forward to gather in the thin, battered frame of Shay Ohmsford and held him close. The Veilman was asleep for a long time, and when he came awake again, it was night. He was lying in the shelter of a rock-encrusted overhang that opened into a deep, wide-bottomed ravine. A small wood fire crackled peacefully, lending added warmth to the cloak that was wrapped tightly about him. His troubled vision had begun to clear, and he found himself staring up into a bright, starlit night sky that stretched canopy-like from ridgetop to ridgetop above him. He smiled in spite of himself. He could imagine himself in Shady Vale once again. A moment later, Al-Anon's dark shadow moved into the dim firelight. "Are you feeling better?" the druid asked in greeting and seated himself. There was something strange about Al-Anon. He seemed more human, less forbidding, and there was an unusual warmth in his voice. Shay nodded. "How did you find me?"
"You found me. Don't you remember anything?"
"No, none of it. Nothing after..." Shay paused hesitantly. "Was there anybody? Did you see anybody else?" Al-Anon studied his anxious expression for a moment, as if debating his answer, then shook his dark face.
"You were alone."
Shay felt something catch in his throat, and he lay back in the warmth of the blankets, swallowing hard. So Panamon, too, was gone. Somehow he had not expected it to end like this. "Are you all right?" the druid's deep voice reached out to him in the darkness.
"Would you like to eat something now? I think it would be good for you if you did."
"Yes." Shay pushed himself up into a sitting position, the cloak still wrapped protectively about him. By the fire, Al-Anon was pouring soup into a small bowl. The aroma reached out to him invitingly, and he breathed it in. Then suddenly, he thought of the Sword of Shannara and looked for it in the darkness. He saw it almost immediately lying next to him, the bright metal gleaming faintly. As an afterthought, he felt through the pockets of his tunic for the elf stones. He could not find them. Panicked, he began searching desperately through his clothing for the little pouch, but the result was the same. It was gone. A sinking sensation gripped him, and he lay back weakly for a moment. Perhaps Al-Anon. "Al-Anon, I can't find elf stones," he said quickly. "Did you..." The druid moved over to his side and handed him the steaming bowl of soup and a small wooden spoon. His face was an impenetrable black shadow.
"No, Shay. You must have lost them when you fled the knife edge."
He saw the crestfallen look on the other's face and reached over to pat the slim shoulder reassuringly.
"There's no point in worrying about them now.
Stones have served their purpose. I want you to eat something and go back to sleep. You need to rest. Mechanically, Shay sipped at the soup, unable to forget quite so easily the loss of the elf stones. They had been with him from the beginning, protecting him every step of the way. Several times they had saved his life. How could he have been so careless? He thought back for a moment, trying vainly to remember where he might have lost them, but it was useless. It could have happened any time. I'm sorry about the elf stones, he apologized quietly, feeling that he had to say something more. Al-Anon shrugged and smiled faintly. He seemed weary and somehow older as he seated himself beside the Veilman. Maybe they'll turn up later. Shay finished the bowl in silence, and Al-Anon refilled it without being asked. The warm liquid relaxed the still weary Veilman, and a numbing drowsiness began to seep slowly through his body. He was falling asleep again. It would have been so easy to give in to the feeling, but he could not. There were still too many things bothering him, too many unanswered questions. He wanted those answers now from the one man who could give them to him. He deserved that much after everything he had been through. He struggled to a sitting position, aware that Al-Anon was watching him closely from out of the darkness beyond the little fire. In the distance, the sharp cry of a night bird broke through the deep silence. Shay paused in spite of himself. Life was coming back to the Northland. After so long. He placed the bowl of soup on the ground next to him and turned to Al-Anon. Can we talk a while? The druid nodded silently. Why didn't you tell me the truth about the sword? The Veilman asked softly. Why didn't you? I told you all that you needed to know. Al-Anon's dark face was impassive. The sword itself told you the rest. Shay stared at him incredulously. It was necessary for you to learn the secret of the Sword of Shannara for yourself, the druid continued gently. It was not something that I could explain to you. It was something that you had to experience. You had to learn to accept the truth about yourself first, before the sword could be of any use to you as a talisman against the Warlock Lord. It was a process in which I could not involve myself directly. Well, could you not at least have told me why the sword would destroy Brona? Shay persisted. And what would that have done to you, Shay? The Veilman frowned. I don't understand. If I had told you everything that it was in my power to tell you about the sword, remembering now that you would not have the benefit of hindsight as you do now to enlighten you, would that have helped you in practical terms? Would you have been able to continue your search for the sword? Would you have been able to draw the sword against Brona, knowing that it would do no more than reveal to him the truth about himself? Would you have even believed me when I said that such a simple thing would destroy a monster with the power of the Warlock Lord? He hunched down closer to Shay in the dim firelight. Or would you have given up on yourself and the quest then and there? How much truth could you have withstood? I don't know, Shay answered doubtfully. Then I will tell you something I could not tell you before. Gerald Shannara, 500 years earlier, knew all these things. And still he failed. But I thought that he was successful, Al-Anon finished the thought. Yet if he had been successful, would not the Warlock Lord have been destroyed? No, Shay. Gerald Shannara did not succeed. Bremen confided in the Elven King the secret of the sword because he, too, thought that knowing how the talisman would be used might better prepare the bearer for a confrontation with Brona. It did not. Even though he had been forewarned that he would be exposed to the truth about himself, Gerald Shannara was not prepared for what he discovered. Indeed, there was probably no way that he could have adequately prepared himself beforehand. We build too many walls to be completely honest with ourselves, and I don't think that he ever really believed Bremen's warning about what would happen when he finally held the sword. Gerald Shannara was a warrior king, and his natural instinct was to rely on the sword as a physical weapon, even though he had been told that it would not help him in that way. When he confronted the warlock lord and the talisman began to work on him, exactly as Bremen had warned, he panicked. His physical strength, his fighting prowess, his battle experience, all of it useless to him. It was just too much for him to accept. As a result, the warlock lord managed to escape him. Shay looked unconvinced. It might have been different with me. But the druid did not seem to hear him. I would have been with you when you found the sword of Shannara, and when the secret of the talisman revealed itself to you, I would have explained then its significance as a weapon against the warlock lord. But then I lost you in the dragon's teeth, and it was only later that I realized you had found the sword and gone northward without me. I came after you, but even so, I was almost too late. I could sense your panic when you discovered the secret of the sword, and I knew the warlock lord could sense it as well. But I was still too far away to reach you in time. I tried to call out to you, to project my voice into your mind. There wasn't time enough to tell you what to do. The warlock lord prevented that. A few words. That was all. He paused, almost as if he had gone into a trance, his dark gaze fixed on the air between them. But you discovered the answer on your own, Shay. And you survived. The Veilman looked away, reminded suddenly that although he was alive, it seemed that everyone who had gone with him into the Kingdom of the Skull was dead. It might have been different, he repeated woodenly. Alanon said nothing. At his feet, the small fire was dying slowly into reddish embers as the night closed about them. Shay picked up the bowl of soup and finished it quickly, feeling the drowsiness slip through him once more. He was nodding when Alanon stirred unexpectedly in the darkness and moved next to him. You believe me wrong in not telling you the secret of the sword, he murmured softly. It was more a statement of fact than a question. Perhaps you were right. Perhaps it would have been better for everyone if I had revealed it all to you from the first. Shay looked up at him. The lean face was a mask of dark hollows and angular lines that seemed the wrappings of some perpetual enigma. No. You were right, the Veilman replied slowly. I'm not sure I could have handled the truth. Alanon's head tilted slightly to one side, as if considering the possibility. I should have had more faith in you, Shay. But I was afraid. He paused as a trace of doubt clouded the Veilman's face. You don't believe me, but it's true. To you, to the others as well, I have always been something more than human. It was necessary, or you would never have accepted your role as I gave it to you. But a druid is still a human being, Shay. And you have forgotten something. Before he became the warlock lord, Brona was a druid. Thus, to some extent at least, the druids must bear responsibility for what he became. We permitted him to become the warlock lord. Our learning gave him the opportunity. Our subsequent isolation from the rest of the world allowed him to evolve. The entire human race might have been enslaved or destroyed, and the guilt would have been ours. Twice the druids had the opportunity to destroy him, and twice they failed to do so. I was the last of my people, and if I were to fail as well, then there would be no one left to protect the races against this monstrous evil. Yes, I was afraid. One small mistake and I might have left Brona free forever. The druid's voice dropped to a whisper, and he looked down for an instant. There is one more thing you should know. Bremen was more to me than simply my ancestor. He was my father.
Your father?
Shay came fully awake for an instant.
But that's not possible.
He trailed off, unable to finish. Alanon smiled faintly. There must have been times when you guessed that I was older than any normal man could be, surely. The druids discovered the secret of longevity following the first war of the races. But there is a price. A price that Brona refused to pay. There are many demands and disciplines required, Shay. It is no great gift. And for our waking time, we pile up a debt that must be paid by a special kind of sleep that restores us from our aging. There are many steps to true longevity, and some are not pleasant. Not one is easy. Brona searched for a way different from that of the druids, a way that would not carry the same price, the same sacrifices. In the end, he found only illusion. The druid seemed to retreat into himself for a long moment, then continued. Bremen was my father. He had a chance to end the menace of the warlock lord, but he made too many mistakes and Brona escaped him. His escape was my father's responsibility, and if the warlock lord had succeeded in his plans, my father would have earned the blame. I lived with the fear of that happening until it was an obsession. I swore not to make the mistakes he had made. I'm afraid, Shay, that I never really had much faith in you. I feared you were too weak to do what had to be done, and I hid the truth to serve my own ends. In many ways, I was unfair to you. But you were my last chance to redeem my father, to purge my own sense of guilt for what he had done, and to erase forever the responsibility of the druids for the creation of Brona. He hesitated and looked directly into Shay's eyes. I was wrong, Veilman. You were a better man than I gave you credit for being. Shay smiled and shook his head slowly. No, Alanon. You were the one who so often spoke to me of hindsight. Now heed your own words, historian. In the darkness across from him, the druid returned the smile wistfully. I wish we had more time, Shay Ohmsford. Time to learn to know each other better. But I have a debt that must be paid. All too soon. He trailed off almost sadly, the lean face lowering into shadow. The puzzled Veilman waited a moment, thinking that he would say something more. he did not. In the morning, then. Shay stretched wearily and burrowed deep into the cloak, warm and relaxed by the soup and the fire. We've a long journey back to the Southland. Al-Anon did not reply immediately. Your friends are close now, looking for you, he responded finally. When they find you, will you relate to them all that I have told you? Shay barely heard him, his thoughts drifting to Shady Vale and the hope of going home again. You can do the job better than I, he murmured sleepily. There was another long moment of silence. At last he heard Al-Anon moving in the darkness beyond, and when the tall man spoke again, his voice sounded strangely distant. I may not be able to, Shay. I'm very tired. I've exhausted myself physically. For a time now, I must sleep. Tomorrow, Shay mumbled. Good night. The druid's voice came back a whisper. Goodbye, my young friend. Goodbye, Shay. But the Veilman was already sleeping. Shay awoke with a start, the morning sunlight streaming down on him. His eyes snapped open at the sound of horses' hooves and booted feet, and he found himself surrounded by a cluster of lean, rangy figures clothed in forest green. Instinctively, his hand dropped to the sword of Shannara, and he struggled to a sitting position, squinting sharply to see their faces. They were elves. A tall, hard-featured elf detached himself from the group and bent down to him. Deep, penetrating green eyes locked into his own, and a firm hand came up to rest reassuringly on his shoulder. You're among friends, Shay Omsford. We are eventimes men. Shay climbed slowly to his feet, still grasping the sword guardedly. Al-Anon? He asked, looking about for the druid. The tall man hesitated for a moment, then shook his head. There is no one else here. Only you. Stunned, Shay moved past him and pushed his way through the ring of horsemen, his eyes quickly searching the length of the wide ravine. Gray rock and dust stared back at him, an empty, deserted passage that twisted and disappeared from sight. Except for the elven riders and himself, there was no one else. Then something the druid had said came back to him, and he knew then that Al-Anon was really gone. Sleeping, he heard himself whisper. Woodenly he turned back to the waiting elves, then hesitated as tears streamed down his haggard face. But Al-Anon would come back to them when he was needed, he told himself angrily. Just as he had always done before. He brushed away the tears and glanced momentarily into the bright blueness of the Northland sky. For just an instant, he seemed to hear the druid's voice calling to him from far, far away. A faint smile crossed his lips. Goodbye, Al-Anon, he answered softly. Chapter 35. So it ended. Little more than 10 days later, those who still remained of the little band that had journeyed forth from Cullhaven so many weeks ago bade farewell to one another for the last time. It was a bright, clear day filled with sunshine and summer's freshness. From out of the west, a gentle breeze ruffled the emerald green carpet of the Tirzian grasslands, and in the distance the sluggish roar of the Myrmidon floated softly through the early morning stillness. They stood together by the roadway leading out from the walled city. Durin and Dale, the former without the use of his left arm, which was splinted and wrapped. Dael had found him among the wounded, and now he was healing rapidly. Balinor Buckhanna in chainmail and royal blue riding cloak, a still pale Shay Omsford, the faithful Flick, and Minion Lee. They spoke in quiet tones for a time, smiling bravely, trying to appear amiable and relaxed without much success, glancing from time to time at the tethered horses that grazed contentedly behind them. At last, there was an awkward silence, and hands were extended and taken, and mumbled promises to visit soon were quietly exchanged. It was a painful goodbye, and behind the smiles and the handshakes, there was sadness. Then they rode away, each to his own home. Durin and Dael traveled west to Beleil, where Dael would finally be reunited with his beloved Linlas. The Omsfords turned south to Shady Vale, and as Flick had repeatedly announced to his brother, a well-deserved rest. As far as Flick was concerned, their traveling days were over. Minion Lee went with them to the Vale, determined to see to it personally that nothing further befell Shay. From there, he would return for a time to the Highlands to be with his father, who would be missing him by now. But very soon he knew he must come back again to the border country and to the red-haired daughter of kings who would be waiting. Standing silently by the empty roadway, Balinor watched after his friends until they were no more than small shadows in the distant green of the flatlands. Then slowly he mounted his waiting horse and rode back into Tirsis. The Sword of Shannara remained in Callahorn. It had been Shay's firm decision to leave the talisman with the border people. No one had given more to preserve the freedom of the four lands. No one had a better right to be entrusted with its care and preservation. And so the legendary sword was implanted blade downward in a block of red marble and placed in a vault in the center of the gardens of the People's Park in Tirsis, sheltered by the wide, protective span of the Bridge of Sendik, there to remain for all time. Carved upon the stone facing of the vault was the inscription, "Herein lies the heart and soul of the nations. Their right to be free men, their desire to live in peace, their courage to seek out truth. Herein lies the Sword of Shannara." Weeks later, Shay perched wearily on one of the tall wooden stools in the inn kitchen and studied blankly the plate of food on the counter in front of him. At his elbow, Flick was already starting on his second helping. It was early in the evening, and the Omsford brothers had spent the entire day repairing the veranda roof. The summer sun had been hot and the work had been tedious, yet although he was tired and vaguely disgruntled, Shay found himself unable to locate his appetite. He was still picking at his food when his father appeared in the hall doorway, mumbling blackly to himself. Curzad Omsford came up to them without a word and tapped Shay on the shoulder. "How much longer is this nonsense going to continue?" he demanded. Shay looked up in surprise. "I don't know what you mean," he answered truthfully, glancing at Flick, who shrugged blankly. "Not eating much either, I see." His father spied the dinner plate. "How do you expect to get your strength back if you don't eat properly?" He paused for a moment and then seemed to recall that he had gotten off the subject entirely. "Strangers, that's what I mean. Now I suppose you'll be off again. I thought that was all done with." Shay stared at him. "I'm not going anywhere. What in the world are you talking about?" Curzad Omsford seated himself heavily on a vacant stool and eyed his foster son closely, apparently resigned to the fact that he was not going to get a straight answer without a little unnecessary effort. "Shay, we have never lied to each other, have we? When you came back from your visit with the Prince of Lee, I never pressed you about what went on while you were there, even though you left in the middle of the night without a word to anyone, even though you came back looking like your own ghost and very carefully avoided telling me exactly how you got that way. Now answer me, he continued quickly when Shay tried to object. I never once asked you to tell me anything, did I? Shay shook his head silently. His father nodded in satisfaction. No, because I happen to believe that a man's business is mostly his own affair. But I cannot forget that the last time you disappeared from the Vale was right after that other stranger appeared asking for you. Other stranger? The brothers exclaimed together. Instantly all the old memories came back to them. Alanon's mysterious appearance, Balinor's warning, the skull-bearers, the running, the fear. Shay slid down from his stool slowly. There's someone here, looking for me. His father nodded, his broad face clouding darkly as he caught the look of concern mirrored in his son's furtive glance at the doorway. A stranger, like before. He got in several minutes ago looking for you. He's waiting out in the lobby. But I don't see... Shay, what can we do? Flick interrupted hurriedly. We don't even have the Elfstones to protect us anymore. I don't know, his brother mumbled, desperately trying to think through his confusion. We could slip out the back way. Ah, wait a minute. Curzed Omsford had heard enough. He gripped their shoulders tightly and turned them about to face him, staring at them in disbelief. I did not raise my sons to run away from trouble. He studied their worried faces a moment and shook his head. You must learn to face your problems, not run from them. Why, here you are in your own home, among family and friends who will stand by you, and you talk about running away. He released them and stepped back a pace. Now we'll all go out there together and face this man. He looks a hard sort, but he seemed friendly enough when we talked. Besides, I don't think a one-handed man is any kind of a match physically for three whole men, even with that pike. Shay started abruptly. One-handed? He looks like he traveled a long way to get here. The elder Omsford did not seem to have heard him. He's carrying a little leather pouch that he claims belongs to you. I offered to take it, but he wouldn't give it to me. Said he wouldn't give it to anyone but you. Now, suddenly, Flick understood. There must be something important, his father declared. He told me you dropped it on your way home. Now, how could that happen? Curzed Omsford had to wait a while longer for his answer. In a rush, his sons were past him, through the kitchen door and halfway down the hallway to the lobby of the inn. This concludes the reading of The Sword of Shannara by Terry Brooks. Copyright 1977 by Terry Brooks. This full-length reading was published by arrangement with Random House Audio Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated, and was produced in 2003 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. This book was read by Scott Brick.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.